What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Russia's war in Ukraine prompts a historic shift in European security policy as countries commit new weapons to the fight.
I think within 3 days, more has happened in Europe in terms of politics and security arrangements than in the past 30 years.
Plus, Western sanctions bring the Russian ruble to its knees, and the global labor competition heats up yet again as Samsung workers demand a major bump in pay. It's Monday, February 28th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Russian forces have faced fierce resistance to their invasion of Ukraine, as Kiev defenders continue to hold on to the capital as well as Ukraine's second biggest city, Kharkiv. Overnight, Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered the country's nuclear deterrence forces to be put on alert in a sign of growing tensions with the West over Ukraine. Our Moscow bureau chief Anne Simmons says the move is likely to trigger a response from Western allies.
President Putin said this move was necessary because there has been increasing threatening and aggressive kind of rhetoric from the West towards Russia, and in particular from the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO. And he also pointed out what the Kremlin calls illegal sanctions that the US and Europe have leveled against Russia. This will undoubtedly mean that NATO might need to take a similar posture in order to ensure that the military alliance is ready to defend its members.
Meanwhile, Russian and Ukrainian officials are meeting today in the first talks since the invasion began. However, it's unclear to what extent the negotiations, which are taking place near Ukraine's border with Belarus, could end the Russian aggression. Later today, the United Nations General Assembly and the Security Council are holding separate meetings on Russia's invasion of Ukraine. This comes as the international community ramps up pressure on Moscow. In an all-time first, the European Union has said it will finance the purchase and delivery of weapons in a show of support for Ukraine. At the same time, the EU, US, UK, and Canada have all announced tough new sanctions, which cut some Russian banks off from the international payment system SWIFT. This is all contributing to a volatile outlook for Russian markets, with trade in the Russian ruble essentially ceasing overnight. WSJ Markets reporter Caitlin Ostroff has been tracking the fallout of those sanctions, which include historic restrictions on Russia's central bank. And Caitlin joins us now. Hi, Caitlin.
Hey, Luke.
Suffice it to say, a lot has occurred since Friday when the US and Europe were still discussing ways to isolate the Russian financial system and sanction its leaders. To the best you can, walk us through what's occurred over the last few days.
So over the weekend, we had sanctions imposed by the West, the US, the UK, and the EU. And they went after Russia's access to the SWIFT system, which is kind of the private financial network system that banks and companies wind up using. And they also blocked access to Russian central bank to interact with other central banks. And so basically all of this has spelled a massive barring of the Russian financial system from the global financial system. That has traders spooked in of itself. And then this morning, Russia's central bank came out and said that they were going to bar foreigners from selling Russian assets, at least through the Moscow afternoon. And they also hiked interest rates from 9.5% to 20% this morning. And all of this has really limited liquidity in the Russian market. And so stocks and bonds, local currency bonds at least, are not trading at the moment.
So are there any steps that Russia can take to shore up its financial system, or is the economy and the ruble now essentially in a downward spiral?
This is a spiral. It's really difficult to see how the Russian economy comes back from this, at least in the short term. The soft capital controls that have been imposed by the central bank to kind of arrest some of the sell-off that's expected once Russian markets actually open does prevent some of it for the moment, but that also has the impact of when other countries have imposed capital controls, investors don't want to go back there because there's always the risk in the back of their minds that if they ever want to get their money out, they can't, which is what's happening now. And so even if the invasion gets settled, if Russia retreats, even if this winds up de-escalating, investors are going to be very cautious to put their money back into Russian assets.
And finally, Caitlin, the age-old question around sanctions is about their unintended and intended consequences. Are they going to hurt ordinary people more than the decision-makers that they aim to influence? What is likeliest in this case?
This is already having an impact on ordinary Russians. So the cutoff from SWIFT is going to prevent them from being able to use their credit cards and their domestic banking cards from buying things denominated in other currencies abroad if they travel. There's already been restrictions on Russian flights and airspace of Western countries. And so this is already having a knock-on effect for ordinary citizens. I think most Russians did not expect that there would actually be an invasion of Ukraine. And so everyone is just, you know, there are already economic consequences happening, and I think people are just very nervous.
That was Journal Markets reporter Caitlin Ostroff. Caitlin, thanks for the time.
Thanks, Luke.
Coming up, Western countries aren't just uniting on economic punishments against Russia. In Europe, the continent's foreign policy is also undergoing a rapid evolution as countries like Germany pull a 180 in an effort to stop Russia's invasion of Ukraine. We'll have more on that after the break.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
A new UN climate change report has determined that extreme weather events have become more frequent and severe than was predicted just years ago and are already causing serious health and economic impacts around the world. The report's 270 authors also concluded that countries have done too little to avert the costly damage of extreme weather events in the coming decades. Meanwhile, in Washington, the U.S. Supreme Court is today set to hear a case challenging the Environmental Protection Agency's authority to regulate power plant emissions. It stems from a lawsuit brought by a coalition of Republican states that are seeking to block climate initiatives the Biden administration could propose in the future. New York State is set to lift existing mask mandates for public schools, as well as vaccine requirements for restaurants, fitness centers, and entertainment venues. That said, counties and cities can keep the school mask requirements if they wish. New York City Mayor Eric Adams said the restrictions could be lifted by March 7th, with a final decision expected Friday. And more than 100,000 employees of South Korean tech giant Samsung are asking for a nearly 16% pay raise, citing rising living costs, improved productivity, and the company's strong financial results. Journal reporter Ji Young Seon says the workers represent nearly half of Samsung's global workforce, and their request is the largest base salary bump in the company's history.
We don't know yet how Samsung will settle the wage negotiations, but if it were to grant this generous double-digit raise to employees, that could provide even more momentum to the increased leverage that the tech workforce has been enjoying. There's a big competition for talent going on in the tech industry now, and that's been placing pressures on companies to offer more in the way of wages, bonuses, perks, and benefits in order to retain top talent.
Samsung declined to comment on the forces driving the workers' salary requests or rising competition, but says it's, quote, making every sincere effort to come to an agreement. The war in Ukraine seems to have produced a historic shift in European security policy. Germany over the weekend said it would boost annual military spending above NATO's target and is joining a number of other European countries in sending weapons to Ukraine. It's a vivid illustration of how Russian President Vladimir Putin's invasion is sending shockwaves throughout the continent. And joining us with more on this is the Wall Street Journal's Germany correspondent, Bojan Panchevsky. Hi, Bojan.
Hi, Luke.
Thanks for being with us. What has changed over the weekend when it comes to the wider European security response to the war in Ukraine?
Well, in a nutshell, everything. I think within 3 days, more has happened in Europe in terms of politics and security arrangements than in the past 30 years. It's certainly the biggest and most momentous event since the fall of the Berlin Wall, since the fall of the Iron Curtain in 1989. Essentially, Germany declared something that they've been refusing to do for many decades. They will rearm, they will change their security posture, they will change their security and foreign policy, and they will so to speak, defend against Russia if necessary. That was a very welcome event for the United States and for NATO, the alliance. And I think we're seeing Europe kind of becoming glued together in the face of the challenge that Vladimir Putin has kind of posed to the continent's security with his invasion of Ukraine.
Beyond Germany, what are the European nations actually pledging here? I understand sort of the direct provision of military support, which we've seen is pretty unusual.
Yes, I mean, Ukraine is now getting support from all across the Western Bloc. Even Germany, which long has had a kind of a pacifist policy in that regard, and as early as 2 weeks ago, probably, the German government was saying that they will not be exporting lethal weapons to Ukraine because of the... They justified that with the fact that they don't want to export weapons to conflict zones and that they will not like their weapons to be used against Russia because of the crimes the Nazis committed during the Second World War. Now, all of that is out of the window. They are sending Stinger missiles. They are basically anti-aircraft missiles and anti-tank missiles and armored vehicles, ammunition, fuel, the whole lot. And this has been done by other European countries for weeks now. Great Britain is supplying weapons en masse. Poland is supplying weapons. Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, and other nations as well. And obviously including the United States.
And was there something in particular that explains this massive shift in strategy? Was it the nuclear threats that Russia has issued? Was it public pressure to intervene or something else entirely?
I think it's a combination of pretty much all of these things. But essentially, there was a landmark speech by the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz yesterday, Sunday. And he said, I've spoken to Putin and I think he wants to create a Russian empire and he needs to be stopped. And I think that's, in a nutshell, the explanation for this alarm, for this level of alert and effort in Europe. Because basically, they think with his illegal invasion of Ukraine, he has challenged the post-World War order in Europe, which is based, as Scholz said, is based on countries acknowledging each other's borders.
These massive changes that you've described are only now days and hours old in some cases, but is it possible to see what some of the longer-term implications to international security might be now that Europe is taking this dramatically different posture?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, nothing will be the same. We are entering a new period of Cold War, a serious Cold War. I think there's a new Iron Curtain descending, dividing Russia and its dominions from the West, from NATO. I think it's extremely difficult to imagine that things will go back to normal anytime soon. There will be rearmament across Europe. There will be possibly a new arms race. There will certainly be tensions between Russia and European countries and the United States. There will be talks about missiles and missile defense. I mean, Putin is already threatening a nuclear attack. So these are very, very grave and serious events.
That was the Journal's Germany correspondent, Bojan Panchevsky. Bojan, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you, Luke. My pleasure.
And finally, the conflict in Ukraine is also exacerbating this winter's sharp rise in energy prices, helping keep inflation at its highest rate in 40 years. As WSJ reporter Gabriel Rubin explains, the average consumer will likely bear the brunt of those extra costs, though he says companies are finding ways to charge you more without actually raising prices.
In some cases, the amount you're paying for a particular good or service might actually be the same as what you paid a couple of years ago, but you're getting a lot less for that price. So, for instance, at Disney World, they no longer provide free shuttles from the airport to your Disney hotel, and you have to pay for an Uber or a Lyft or a different shuttle service. Also, hotels might not clean your room every single day the way they would have before the pandemic, or the breakfast that used to be hot eggs and toast and bacon is now a small box of cereal or a granola bar in a paper bag. So you're getting a lot less for your money, even if the amount you're paying is roughly the same as you would have paid before the pandemic.
And check out the size of that next pint of ice cream at the supermarket, because I've started to see a lot of 14-ounce containers lately. And that's What's News for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.